Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show, where we have one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Here's your host, Kyle Joseph.
Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. Once again, my name is Kyle. I'm your host today and every day. On this episode, we will cover my thoughts and feelings on this week's SmackDown and Raw as we lead ourselves towards SummerSlam taking place in August. As far as NXT, I have finally caught myself up, so anything going forward will be live and up-to-date thoughts and opinions. But for now, we will get caught up, tied up on the loose ends of my NXT journey. As for AEW, I am happy to see some really great action going on, but I will also talk about how AEW, in my opinion, acted extremely irresponsible in the main event of Fight for the Fallen. All of that, plus, I will give the 10 things that I want to see take place in WWE 2K22. All that will be in the last shot. So please stick around, and we'll be back. All right, well, SummerSlam is coming up in a few weeks, and WWE is continuing to shape their stories going into the second biggest event on the calendar for WWE. That's what they say. I still feel like Royal Rumble is number two compared to WrestleMania, but I guess that's my opinion, and I don't know if I'm sharing that opinion with anybody else, but I think maybe just more from a attention-grabbing, you can't beat a Royal Rumble. You just never know who's going to show up. You just never know what's going to happen. That being said, SummerSlam is coming anyways. So if we look at kind of how we went through with SmackDown, we're starting to see some contenders for the Intercontinental Championship start to align. We have Rude, we have Ziggler, Big E, Cesaro, Shinsuke, all superstars that are able to carry a belt like that with some prestige, with some purpose, with some momentum. I'm over Apollo Crews. I'm over Commander Aziz. I think there's better suited people for the championship who can offer a much more versatile opportunity for competitors. We did see Wale bringing WWE to Rolling Loud, which I guess is a major hip-hop concert. I have to applaud the attempt. I think it's important for WWE to continue expanding their reach. And I think obviously it helps that Wale is a very, very big WWE fan. The matches were okay. The camera work was not so good. I don't know if it was just limitations of the space they were working in or whatever, but there's a couple of really, really bad camera angles. But if I have to look at it, I mean, I'm not too sure that there's a majority of the fans that were there would appreciate a WWE match. So it did seem a little bit dead. It also doesn't help that it's outdoor. And there's nothing to bounce the sound off of. So I really do hope that they continue these efforts and trying to stretch and trying to do new things. I'm just not sure how much you can do without having a really WWE or wrestling in general oriented audience. Unless you're going to bring somebody in that can, you know, cross that gap or can join two different interests together to try and really make something that both sets of fans would enjoy. We have some great back and forth between John Cena and Roman Reigns. John Cena calls out Roman. Paul Heyman comes out, continues to spit fire with that microphone, then turns around and walks away. And as he's walking away, he's singing John Cena's theme music, which was just the icing on the cake. He continues to impress me. He continues to nail these moments out of the park. And I think I have to imagine that John Cena was close to busting a gut when Paul Heyman was doing that. And he did it perfectly. He's just walking away, walking to the back. Roman came out, denied John Cena's opportunity at SummerSlam. Roman, at least in this stage, is getting much better in his conversations, rather his mic skills as it relates to John Cena, it helps that they are not together. I think if you look at it, John Cena versus Roman Reigns in a ring with a mic, John Cena's going to annihilate him. He has just so much stronger skills. He is so much quicker in his thought that there's nothing that Roman can do at this point to match it word for word, face to face. But I mean, Roman throwing out things like the missionary position, which was, I think, pushing the boundaries more of WWE. He had a lot to say. It worked really well. It flowed really well. And obviously with Paul there, it makes a big difference. But again, you got to keep them separate at least for now, because who knows what's going to happen if they do get in a mic to mic battle. You can't have Roman come out on the losing end. Otherwise, it really tears at his head of the table. To wrap it up, though, we are getting a Balor versus Roman match at SummerSlam. This could be really good. I've enjoyed what Roman has brought to the ring lately. I also think that Finn Balor is a great in-ring competitor. I have to liken this to the Balor versus Cross matches, which were both fantastic. While having similar styles, but yet not similar styles, they complemented each other very well. I am certainly looking forward to this one at SummerSlam. On the Raw side, things were very much lackluster for me. They did mention that Drew took 34 chair shots on Shanky, which is a lot. And man, you have to applaud Shanky for taking that many, because they certainly weren't just light taps or fake hits. They were certainly hitting its mark. I did read that Mick Foley wasn't overly pleased with it. I feel like he has changed his tunes on the level of violence that takes place in matches. I think he said more along the lines of this would have been something that was meant for a pay-per-view, a real big payoff, and not just something that happens in kind of an any day or any time portion of Raw. The Eva and Alexa storyline continues to be a sour point for me. I've said it numerous times. I don't understand where they're going with Alexa. What is the purpose of everything she's doing? Will there be at the end a reflection going, okay, this was a slow build of something incredible, or this was something that they had to really work through trying different things before they get to something incredible? Or is this, we're going to continue to do things just to get Alexa on camera, but not really have anything else for her to do? I will never get behind Eva in the ring, out of the ring, as a competitor, whether she's winning or losing. I am not at all a fan of hers. And I think that there's better people to have carried the storyline with Alexa that could have been a lot more interesting. We close out this portion of WWE with my, prediction that came true that Nikki's Money in the Bank contract was going to fall flat. It was going to be short, and it's unfortunate because there was really an opportunity to do something different. They discussed the triple threat women's match, which I was definitely not a fan of. If you're going to have Rhea and Charlotte in a match together, then Nikki becomes a moot point, even though she's champion. Her running around with her cape and mask just will get no attention. But instead, we get a women's championship match with, shockingly enough, Charlotte Flair wins. Throughout that whole interaction, leading up to it, during it, it seemed like Nikki was just a sad little puppy that was just, you know, or the engine that could, and just trying to muster up something to try and beat Charlotte or convince people that what she's doing is right. She's there on behalf of the kids of the world and showing them that they, you know, can't give up. They have to keep believing. Slap a woman's Raw Championship on her? I don't think that's the right avenue to do that kind of stuff. But like I said, it's unfortunate they had wasted one of the Money in the Bank ladder match briefcases. They have a rematch that's taking place next Raw. Hopefully there's an outcome in which Nikki wins and she can carry on a little bit longer, even if, you know, beyond SummerSlam, just so that whole effort didn't come to waste. All right. Whew. That was a lot for WWE, even though I tried to keep it short. All right, on the next portion, we are going to finally get caught up in all of the NXT storylines, matches, whatnot, as we are finally going to be able to go live, or rather the same as Raw and SmackDown, being very current in my thought process. So coming up next, I'm just going to spit out the last bit of thoughts I have before we get to your regular scheduled programming. It's been a long road, but I finally here. I finally got myself caught up, so now I can just talk NXT on the regular, like Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, instead of trying to cram weeks on weeks of thoughts into a segment. That being said, going forward, it will be one two-hour episode of NXT and sharing my thoughts on that. However, let's break down the final thoughts of getting myself caught up that will include the Great American Bash and a couple other items before, after, and then we're good to go. We finally got the reveal of the Diamond Mind. You have Malcolm Ribbons running Roderick Strong, Brandon Rust, and another individual. Not too sure who he is. I think Malcolm Bivens has an air to him that can really work well. I find him to be a very good manager. He speaks well. He carries himself in a specific way, and he definitely has the heel manager down very well. He does it very subtly, but it's there, and you can sense it. I think it's just a matter of trying to find him the right tag team, or the right stable, or the right individual, whatever it may be, to really allow him to show his strengths. We did have a number one contenders women's tag match, and I wanted to call this one specifically because I've been always looking for a proper triple threat match when it comes to tag. In this case, they had done it exactly the way I would expect it. Each tag team had one representative in the ring at a time. They wanted to get out, they tagged their own partner. When you have these triple threat matches where there's only two wrestlers in the ring and the other team can tag themselves in as they please, never made sense to me. A triple threat tag should be the same as a triple threat, just another half of the team. So I have to appreciate that they finally set that up properly. If we go to the Great American Bash now, kind of run into the same problem as AEW, where you have too many of these not really pay-per-views. And at first I thought it was clever, and I think it was a way of really bringing attention to your product. But week on week out, if you keep doing it, I find it dilutes it. Great American Bash used to be a big thing for WCW, and it's fine that it's an NXT, but it's just a random Tuesday. And I don't know if maybe they really need to make more one-offs. Whether they're pre-taped, it doesn't really matter. Put them in a different venue, do something special with it, but it doesn't just need to be a Great American Bash for the sake of being a Great American Bash. We saw the breakout tournament announce their wrestlers. We've seen some of the matches, but one of them that comes to mind is Josh Briggs. I have seen Josh Briggs several times, both here in Ottawa and in Hamilton. I mean, there is something to be said for his physique, rather his physique before NXT. He had the long hair. He kind of had that bruiser type vibe to him. He recovered from a dislocated hip, so he had to plot all that. Now he looks a lot heavier, and he's got the short hair, and I just find that he gets lost in, he is no longer distinctive. Other than his height, he just kind of falls in line with the rest of them. But the one thing that does surprise me is his name was thrown around during the speaking out movement, especially among wrestlers, and inappropriate conversations, inappropriate behaviors between wrestlers and whether it's regular fans, young fans, up-and-coming wrestlers. Messages are getting shared across that really just aren't something that I think the WWE would really want to be put behind. So I'm interested to see how they worked around this. Maybe the situation with Josh Briggs just wasn't big enough to get on the radar. He did lose his match. I don't think he was overly impressive in it, so I'm not sure where they're going to go from there, but I do think he needs to get back to his previous self. The long hair, the single shoulder, shoulder pad thing. He was a lot leaner, and he just stood out more. And I think he really needs to get back to that. I saw the low battery vignettes slowly come up, and then it turns out it was Tegan Knox, who is also a member of Knox and Shotney, Shotzi and Knox in SmackDown. So it's like, for me, it's really confusing to how we got to this point where how did she get there? And I know they do reference on the 13th of July signing Shotzi to SmackDown. It was just a really odd kind of passing comment. Ember Moon talked about how she was happy for her, but they never really explained why those two split and how Knox and Shotzi got involved together as well. It seemed like a bit of a rush, or there was just circumstances that weren't going to work out with Ember Moon, or whatever the case may be, that they kind of rushed to this point. Swerve Scott and his hit row is making more and more of a presence on TV, and I still can't get behind them. I haven't been a fan of Swerve Scott since he's shown up in WWE. Just not a fan of his mic skills or the way he carries himself, his in-ring skills, I don't know. And this hit row thing just doesn't make it any better. I could take him or I could leave him. They don't necessarily seem like, you know, pure wrestlers to me, and I feel like that's what they really need, is wrestlers in a wrestling ring. We did have a couple matches with Adam Cole. His match with Kyle O'Reilly, and he put on way, way too many Panama Sunrises. This is supposed to be special. It's supposed to be kind of that finisher or the one move that really can guarantee him a win. And when you do it twice on the outside, a couple times on the inside, it just loses its impact. So I want to, it's not just for him and his Panama Sunrise. I think there's a lot of wrestlers that continue to their go-to move and are expecting the audience to believe that it's more powerful this time than the time you did it 3 minutes ago. So they really need to get back to bringing those out at a very specific moment and making it mean something, whether it's the match is over or it's this one idea that the other wrestlers overcome great odds to stay in the match. We did see a couple of, I don't know if you want to call them crossovers. When you factor in Knox and Shotzi, Karrion Kross has made his way to Raw as well as still in NXT. Mandy Rose has started to show up. Somewhere I was reading that she might stay in NXT. Don't know what happened to Dana Brooke as a result. So, you know, it's just, I find it interesting that we're starting to see more wrestlers rocking two different brands. I did notice another Impact connection, Drake Maverick, or Rockstar Spud as he was in Impact, going against LA Knight, throwing in Cameron Grimes. I'm not sure what's going to happen to Drake Maverick, but I do find it a little fascinating that you are having another Impact. I don't want to call it a reference because they don't reference them, but it's that notion that a fan of multiple wrestling shows would note that this is another Impact matchup. Lastly, before I go to the big moment, I just wanted to call out that the first time seeing Bea Priestley as Gigi Dolin, she's tied in with Mandy Rose. We'll see what happens. It's just been a while since she signed to see her in the ring. It's also a little odd because she obviously is not carrying the same character she was before. So we'll see how that goes out. It's just another notable name that I had identified earlier on and kind of just keeping tabs on and finally seeing her in the ring. But my big observation right now is Killer Cross. Karrion Kross versus Samoa Joe. I hope that Joe is able to stay in NXT as a member of the roster. These two will put on a really great match, really brawling. I'm sure there'll be lots of chest chops and flying forearms and this, that, and the other. And it's definitely a matchup I'm really looking forward to. I like how they led up to this point. And if we're going to get TakeOver 36 around the same time as SummerSlam, this is a really good opportunity for them to come together, I would not be shocked if Samoa Joe walks away with that belt. With Karrion showing up on Raw a couple of times now, I can see him just staying up there and bringing Joe the title, and then Joe can figure out, or Joe specifically, they can figure out who they should put up against Joe so that Joe can then support that person's development into the top spot. Whew. So like I said before, this is it for my getting caught up for NXT. I'm so happy that now any surprise is a surprise for everyone, including me, and nothing gets spoiled because I'm still getting caught up or I'm so far behind. I'm excited to be able to share my thoughts as we go going forward and really being able to live in the moment and really guess where I think NXT is going to go versus already knowing because I read it somewhere before I got caught up. After the break, we are going to go talk some AEW, some Fight for the Fallen. It's definitely the main discussion point. It is the most recent semi-pay-per-view. It definitely had some good matches, but after the break, we will talk about it more. Fight for the Fallen, the most recent, and I believe last, specifically named episode of Dynamite. It looks like we're going to get into the new AEW show Rampage on Friday, which will probably change a little bit of the landscape of who we see and where and when. New commentating crew for that one. This brings in Mark Henry for that piece. We have Paul White on AEW Dark and Excalibur, obviously, on the regular AEW Dynamite. If I want to break it down from beginning to end, as I'm watching the opening kind of vignette to introduce the Dark Order with Hangman Page, I thought, oh, this is fantastic. This was really, really well done. The way they kind of broke down the story, and then even just from a presentation side, I thought it was fantastic. And in fact, I think it's one of the better team openings, for lack of a better term, that I've seen in quite a while. And then the Elite came out in their very Space Jam-oriented presentation, and I thought this was another fantastic opening. It really shows their arrogance and their goofiness. And so I thought, you know, in the end, it was kind of the perfect opposition to the way the Dark Order and Hangman Page. They put on a really good match. There was a lot of back and forth. Some of the eliminations were quick or kind of not obvious, but it is what it is. There looked like a really bad springboard flippy thing that Stu Grayson did. He hit that ground pretty hard. I don't know if he overshot the group or whatever the case may be, but he definitely hit the ground pretty hard that I'd be concerned that he's okay. Hopefully he is. I will say that I was surprised that the Elite won. I thought with Hangman Page being your number one contender, there's a chance that the Dark Order can get some belts. It certainly would work out really well. And I thought, just kind of given the way the storyline was going, and sometimes you can really predict that if someone has a lot of hardships but really fights through it, that in the end it'll be a payoff. But for some reason, this isn't the way they go, and I'm not upset about it. It was definitely unexpected, and I think it's important that every once in a while, the obvious isn't the obvious. We had a match with two of, I think, the purest tag teams in AEW, and I would have to say maybe even wrestling as a whole, just given the length of time that they've been together and that it's very rare you see them in singles matches. They truly are tag teams together, and that's FTR versus Santana Ortiz. I think they put on another solid match. This is what I was waiting for since I started watching Dynamite, is to get these guys in the ring. I'm hoping that we'll see more of FTR in the ring in a capacity that makes sense to me. Pure tag team wrestling. Grab that rope before you tag that opponent or that your teammate, and really bring in that pure tag team style that I think needs to be there for any organization to counteract or to tone down a lot of the high-flying acrobatic style teams. We had a promo with Darby Allin and Sting leading towards Rampage in Chicago. Somebody else is from Chicago. Every time they're in Chicago at any wrestling promotion, the chant for CM Punk exists. They're really leaning towards the idea that he is coming. What kind of CM Punk we're going to get, who knows? I'm not very familiar with him because I wasn't watching wrestling when he was prevalent. I know that Luke Gallows has a history with him because they're part of the Straight Edge Society. I know, or rather, I'm very confident that the pipe bomb, one of the most talked about promos, people are convinced that Vince McMahon knew nothing about it, and I can't imagine that. Vince is always in the know, and he often will let people go and do their thing, especially if they are stepping away from WWE. But it was a big moment. It was something that showed the kind of impact that CM Punk can have. And so I'm interested to see if we get that CM Punk, or if we get some sort of new age CM Punk, or if we get CM Punk at all. This still is the Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson tie-ins that he might be coming. There is no 100% guarantee, but everyone is leaning towards that. And I'm hoping, and I was talking to Allin, the infamous Allin, and we both agree that they need to be done correctly, and they need to be smart in how they do it so that you're not remembering the Daniel Bryan of WWE, and you're not focusing on things that remind people of WWE, because Daniel Bryan, for a lot of people, is WWE. So how do you separate himself? Does he change his look? Does he change his attitude? Do we bring back the old kind of bad guy, Bryan Danielson, maybe from Ring of Honor? Maybe that's the best option for him. But time will tell. If it does happen, I would be more interested to understand why. What was the reasoning behind it? Because I think you're going to see a lot of wrestlers who are near the end of their contract, maybe near the end of their kind of regular fighting matches and wrestling time, that maybe this AEW is that destination to offer a little more flexibility. But as long as they don't get into WCW territory where they start handing out guaranteed contracts where wrestlers don't have to show up, I can live with people changing from WWE to AEW. Now, the main event of this, in my opinion, I am not a deathmatch fan, and I mentioned last week that I was not a fan of the Texas deathmatch. But to me, this was very irresponsible. History has shown the mistakes that can happen and the damage that can be caused by items like light tubes, by panes of glass. And you go in and you promote that. You have this match where right off the hop, Nick Gage has got his pizza cutter that he's known for, slicing up Chris Jericho's forehead. The extreme violence that was offered doesn't make any sense to me. You want to expand your reach, you want to grow your business. Having death matches doesn't do that. Having a guy who almost killed, accidentally, mind you, another wrestler doesn't make sense to me. Having a guy, or rather promoting a guy who robbed a bank doesn't make sense to me. Putting one of your biggest stars at risk by allowing light tubes to happen. Yes, they were smashed on his back, but one was smashed on his head. Then they utilized the broken light tube to cause further damage. And whether that actually happens or not, but there's no denying those light tubes. And I think that this is really irresponsible of AEW to allow this to happen, to put their wrestlers at risk, and to really make it hard for younger fans to really get behind AEW in a healthy way. Yeah, they'll love the violence. Why not? But do you want your fans to go out and smash each other with light tubes because Chris Jericho does it? Is that how you want to grow your business? You want to be considered a legitimate competitor to WWE. You want to be seen as legitimate promotion that can be shown on any channel, that can be go into any venue and put on a great show, make everybody some money. And this, to me, is not at all the way it should be done. Again, this is 2 matches in a row or 2 weeks in a row that you had matches with, in my opinion, unnecessary violence. And it's not even fake violence. It's not chair shots or tables. It's barbed wire, broken glass, light tubes, pizza cutters, whatever the case may be. There's something to be said for natural, or rather, what occurs to be, where what appears to be natural blood and whatnot. But when you're doing it every week, it becomes overkill. And I find that it really takes away from the skill and abilities of the wrestlers themselves to put on a fantastic match. At the end of it, MJF comes out and offers Jericho his next challenge, which is Juicy Juventud Guerrera. This one again is going to be really interesting because both of them are kind of at that stage in their careers where they're on the tail end. There's history behind them. There is complementing styles, but I haven't seen Juventud in a ring in forever since his WCW days. So I don't know how it's going to work out. But I am looking forward to this match because I feel like this will be a cruiserweight style, but more importantly, back to regular wrestling. That brings us up to date on AEW. At some point in time, we'll add Rampage to the mix, see what that's all about. Does it make sense to offer any commentary on it? Is it come more of like an AEW dark where it's just matches? I am interested to see how AEW is going to grow as time moves on. Up next, it is the last shot. It is the wrap-up of the show, and I'm going to break down the 10 things that I want to see take place in WWE 2K22 coming out this October. All right, everyone, we are now at the last segment. It is the last shot. I have read many an article of individuals who want to see specific things brought into WWE 2K22. Obviously, we're without WWE 2K21, given the disaster that was 2K20. There should have been plenty of opportunity to really hit this one out of the park. And I don't want to rank them. There's no ranking in terms of my 10. I just identify 10. I will preface a couple of things. One, getting rid of bugs does not count because that's an expectation. 2K20 was extremely buggy. Wrestlers moving in ways they shouldn't actually be able to, falling into inanimate objects, unable to do certain moves because things aren't lining up, whatever the case may be. So move past that. The other thing I want to call out is my primary usage of the game is through the My Universe. I like the being able to build out my own stories, my own promotion. And that's really the best way to do it. So there won't be a whole lot of focus on other things just because that's where I spend my time. So here we go. From the top, simply in order of what came out of my head. I want more download space. Right now, you can have 100 created wrestlers, and you can only download 20 every 24 hours in part of the community. I want more. If you're going to offer it to me, allow me to really do it. And if you're not going to provide people the wrestlers they want as a standard option, then let them create them and let people use them. It should not matter if I download one in a day, 20, 30, 50. If you're giving me the space and you're giving me the opportunity to download, then why are you restricting me? On top of that, though, there is currently a cap of 1,000 items that are tied to your wrestlers, the ones that you create. And what that means, though, is that the people who put in a lot of effort to really get the detail around various wrestlers, there's only so many you can download, because a lot of them use a lot of different items to piece together clothing or facial pieces or whatever the case may be that you may not notice but are required. And when you look at them all, there's no way you're getting 100 of them before that cap hits. So again, allow people to do more when you're giving them the option for customization. As always, every single year, everyone wants a deeper roster. Every single year, 2K says, here is a deeper roster, more than any other year. That's great, except for you can't count it if there's three different Stings. You can't count it if there's four or five different Charlottes or four or five different Beckys. That doesn't count. So rather than take up that space with the same wrestler multiple times, first things first, allow each version of that wrestler to exist as a change in costume. Because they do it for other things, so why not just add them all in? All the different versions of Becky fall under Becky Lynch, and that way we're allowing more space for other wrestlers to come. I don't think it's too much to ask. I think it's pretty simple. On top of that, if I'm creating an outfit or a secondary outfit for a wrestler, don't make me take up space. Don't make me take up a created space if it's simply a matter of putting a hat on somebody or changing a shirt or putting some pants on them. Really give people an opportunity to really make the most out of their roster. In this most recent version of 2K22, we had some weird set of fantasy worlds. You had an underground one, you had an apocalyptical one, you had a futuristic instead of a server one, and you had a Halloween-y type one. Don't give me those. If you're going to offer these as a special edition or as an extra piece that kind of goes outside of the normal WWE production, give me something worthwhile. I enjoyed the Stone Cold Steve Austin walkthrough of his career, the Daniel Bryan walkthrough of his career. We had, I think it was Greatest WrestleMania Matches. Give me something like that. That's how you can introduce new characters that can be added to your roster. There's plenty of history within WWE to capitalize on that. Give me some Greatest Moments or follow a specific wrestler's career. It doesn't have to be a current wrestler. You can offer it as a limited edition cover or whatever the case may be, but don't give me the same characters just putting on steampunk outfits or really weird, ridiculous Tron-based helmets. The next thing is something that AEW has already started with their mobile version, which is a GM mode. I've got to think it's the one thing that is the most common on every single list. Back in the day, in the Raw vs. SmackDown video games, you had that option. You had that opportunity to create a GM mode where you have two shows competing for the same wrestlers using contract length, dollar amount, it giving you ratings, it giving you revenue. You have My Universe for the true customization right down to the ability to choose who wins. Give us another product to really push how we think things go in a much less predictable sense. Give us an online GM mode where I can go against my friend. We're competing, but we don't have to sit next to each other. If we're going to continue to create online activities or really push to the online space, give me more than just simply having a match online. And the GM mode, I think, is the perfect thing you can do for that. I've said before in a previous review that the AEW General Manager app is very difficult. I think W has an opportunity to really maybe set up different levels so that beginners can really just get a feeling for it before you really start to challenge them. I want more depth in the storylines within My Universe. You see it periodically when you call somebody out or you create a feud. And if you're watching you'll see little snippets as they carry through, but it doesn't seem like it really goes anywhere. It doesn't follow through properly. And when you have these promos come out, they're really flat. They're very generic. They don't really fit the character itself. You're going to call somebody else out. The interaction is pretty the same. You're creating a tag team. You're dismantling one. I think if you were to look back at the history of how WWE has taken these opportunities, let's take that and put it into the game in a much more constructive and immersive environment. Further to that, in terms of more depth, I want more depth in terms of match types. One thing that didn't make sense to me in 2K20 was that you offered matches in the My Superstar that you didn't offer in the regular Play Now or whatever case. You have it. You've made it. So why are we not seeing it in, I want to set up a special match, let me do it. Give me a casket match. Give me maybe not the first one to get lit on fire. That one's a bit, I don't know, maybe a bit of a stretch. You have all these different opportunities, so why not give people the opportunity to do them if you're already going to make it? So give me more match options, whether it's different possibilities. Can we get a 3-on-1? Can we get a 4-on-1? Can we get a gauntlet match? That would be fantastic. There's plenty of things out there that we can add to it to really, again, stretch the possibilities, allow people to have more variation. One of the big points I have with WWE 2K games involves the roster specifically. One, update your roster on the go. And I don't necessarily mean add wrestlers and take wrestlers away. But what I'm getting at is, if I have Baron Corbin who has long hair, and then Baron Corbin decides to shave his head and wear a crown, why am I not able to do that in the game? Why are you not, like every other sports game that has constant updates, doing that for us? Giving us that option to say, hey, I want a more accurate experience. I don't want an experience from February the previous year, and that's where you guys have stopped. With your roster, with your schedule, everything. So give us that opportunity. Or if not, like I've said before, let us create alternate outfits for free. Don't make us take up space so that we could do the updates. And by we, I mean somebody else, because I'm not going to do it. Secondly, with the roster, when I go to create an up-to-date version of my roster in the just general mode, I'm creating teams, I'm breaking up teams that don't exist anymore, I'm setting up their managers and this, that, and the other. When you go to import, some of it works. Who you're in association with, who your manager is, whether you're are you cheered, are you booed, that you can carry over. But why can't you carry over the roster in terms of the teams and whatnot? Why do I have to then turn around and redo it and go through and create a whole other new set of teams? And it's one thing if I take them and I blow them up and I build new teams on my own. That's fine. But if I do the work once, I don't want to do the work twice. Again, people want up-to-date current information. And if you're not going to do it for them, let them do it themselves and stop restricting them. One last thing I want to cover is the calendar. In 2K20, they had Superstar Showdown. They had a 1 month where there was zero pay-per-view, which I know doesn't happen. So why are we not, like, I don't want to have to go in there and build out the whole schedule if I'm just trying to use a version of my universe just to exist as it currently is. As well, give me some old pay-per-views to add. You have labeling for Great Balls of Fire. You have Velocity. You have all these other types of arena symbols, but don't actually give me the arenas. So give me the arena with a pay-per-view or with a show, and I can I can load it as one of them. Give me that option. It's great. I also wish they would bring back kind of the canned or default match types, so I don't have to try and hopefully make it work. If I want a Money in the Bank, I should just be able to choose Money in the Bank, and all the matches are set up that way. I can then alternate as I please, but it's the same way. Backlash, what kind of matches that WWE historically has, things like that. So all in all, that is more or less the things that I want to see. I think there's lots of opportunity, but 2K has to take the initiative and has to maintain it. It is not enough to create a product and then walk away. We are paying good money. We deserve a better experience. Okay, that was way longer of a last shot than I like to have. I liked it to be quick, but this was a big one for me. We are coming closer to October. I figured I would just get my thoughts out of the way, and that way I can kind of take a peek as things go, see if I'm right, see if I'm wrong. We'll see how it goes. So once again, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate all those who are listening. It gives me a chance to just spit out the things that are on my mind and have someone to tell. Once again, if you haven't figured out from the beginning, my name is Kyle. I really do appreciate it. Thank you for coming out, and we will see you next time.